Okay, Shmuel. So now we move chronologically. Shmuel. So, in a nutshell, what is the point of Shmuel? Let's sharpen that. It's justifying, right? I'll put it differently. Shoftim justified, or was an argument for why we need a king. Shmuel, therefore, has to be the story of the monarchy. Right? Good. So let us summarize all of Shmuel, and now Shmuel is a much bigger book, right? Now we're moving to quite large books. Yeah.
Yosef asked before. I'm not sure if who were there for that.
All these books are
all
except for the Torah.
Yes, yeah, so thank you. Torah is Moshe, right? Shmuel. According to Chazal, Shmuel. Yeshua wrote Yeshua except for the end, or obviously after he dies, right? And then that's finished after him. But yes, according to Chazal, Shmuel writes Shoftim, which makes sense, because if Shmuel, right, Shmuel is the one who is the Navi who presides over the monarchy, and Shoftim is an argument for the monarchy, right? He's writing a post facto book, which Toch Kedei provides an argument for a monarchy.
How did he know exactly what happened?
He's a Navi. No, and also there are records. There are also records.
What? All
the books of Navi are written b'nevuah. What? How the books of Navi are different from Ksuvim is a shear for another time. Okay. Now Shmuel wrote part of his book. Shmuel is written by three Nevi'im. What? Ruth is also Shmuel. I think Ruth might also be Shmuel, but I have to look back. I think so. Right? It's the same time period. Okay. Shmuel. Guys. So Shmuel. Let's quickly summarize Shmuel. But it is a much larger book. So, Shmuel starts off with the story of the birth of Shmuel, the barrenness of his mother, Chana, and then Chana is unique. She introduces Tefillah, Toch Kedei the story, right? Her husband Elkanah has two wives. One has children, one does not. She's particularly upset. Again, you get this moment. He tries to cheer her up, but he doesn't really understand why she's so upset. So she goes. She cries silently in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan. Eli sees her, thinks she's drunk. She's not drunk. So when he discovers that, she just said, "I'm just sad. No one's had silent prayer." That's how Chazal understand it. Yes, but not silent prayer according to Chazal. And then she, what does she do? So she says, "No, I'm just upset." And Eli says, "I give you a bracha that you'll have a child." And she had said that if she has a child, she would dedicate the child to God. So that's what happens. She has a child. She doesn't go on the annual pilgrimage of her family to the Mishkan until Shmuel is old enough to enter as a Levi into the workforce. And he enters the workforce of the Mishkan. She brings him a new coat every year. Very, very sweet. Yes, Shmuel's a Levi. Shmuel's a Levi. This is what you find out later. Yes, he's a Levi. He's working in the Mishkan. Anyways, what?
Mishkan is in Shiloh.
Yes, the Mishkan is in Shiloh. Good. Now, he's working there, and what happens? What happens, guys?
War breaks out between the Plishtim.
No, before that. Yes, there's utter corruption in the Beis HaMikdash. The sons of Elish, Chofni, and Pinchas are quite corrupt, whatever exactly they're doing. Right, if you follow the pshat, they're sleeping around with women who come. Right, they're stealing parts of the karban, whatever. Right, Chazal, right, weaken their sin. Yeah, they're exactly. But there's some corruption. Eli is not doing quite enough to stop this. So Shmuel gets his first nevuah. What's his first nevuah? Right. So you have this very interesting scene where, for a while, he doesn't realize it's God. He keeps thinking it's Eli. Eli, why are you calling me? I'm not calling you. Go back to sleep. Right. And he does this a few times. Eventually, he realizes. He tells him. What?
Yes.
Oh, it's a fun scene. And he tells him eventually, Eli tells him, look, it's God, listen up. He gets a message from, now presumably, by the way, no, so Mati, why does that story happen? Why? The simplest shot is, why does it happen this way? No, so he won't be able to hide it from Eli. Because Eli will have known that he was getting a prophecy, because that's the point. In the morning, Eli gets up and says, "Nu, what was the Nevuah?" And the Nevuah was, because you haven't been giving rebuke to your sons, the Kuhn and Gadula is going to be stripped from you, your sons are going to die, it's going to be disaster. Right? And that's what happens. There's a war with the Plishtim, they're losing, so finally they decide to bring out the
Aron.
The Aron, and the Aron gets stolen. And Hophni and Pinchas get killed, and they come back, and they tell Eli, and Eli falls backwards and dies. From this, then you get the whole drama of the Aron being by the Plishtim, and then everybody getting punished for amongst the Plishtim for having it. They send it back to Beit Shemesh. Great. What? Yeah, with the cows and the etc. Right, get all that punishment.
Stolen by the Plishtim.
Yes.
Yeah. During like a war?
During the war.
Yeah.
Yes, during a war. Because they sent out the Aron to the war as a good luck charm.
That was the first time we bought
it. Yes. Yes. So then what happens? So then we get the story after this, guys. After this, what do we get?
Is there a part
No.
Is there a part about a cyclops? Is there a part with a cyclops getting punched in the eye after stealing the Aron?
No.
What? You gotta stop talking to me.
No. Stop making news up. Thank you. No. No.
Hey,
guys. What happens after that? Shmuel? Shmuel? No, not yet. Shmuel is a successful shofet for a Navi for a long time. And he goes around the whole country. Not yet.
It's like a paragraph later.
Not yet. He goes around. Shmuel goes around. Right? He goes around to be a shofet. And he's very successful. And he's beloved by everybody. And he's this very successful Navi in all of Klal Yisrael. But then what happens?
He gets
why?
He asked for a king.
Because he gets old and his sons are not as righteous as he is. So they come to Shmuel and they say, "We want a king." And what does Shmuel say? No, don't do it. Bad, it's terrible. You don't want God as your king. You crazy, evil people. And what does God say to Shmuel? Let him have it. In a very cynical moment, God says, "Look, what are you so upset about? It's not like they're angry at you. They just hate me. What is it? What are you? What's your problem? They just hate me, right? Let them have it." Okay. It's a vet. And then Shmuel is not willing to relent. He does give them a king, but first he gives them a whole Moser Shmuz, and he makes a miracle happen that rain comes in the summer, and they all get terrified, and he says, "Look, you're going to have a king, and it's going to be terrible, and he's going to take your land, and he's going to take your children, and make them work for him. It's going to be a disaster." And they are like, "Okay, whatever, but we sinned, but whatever, we're going to get a king anyways." So then you get the story of the appointment of
Shaul,
good. So you get Shaul. How does that happen?
He loses a donkey,
and he's wandering around, and apparently what Nevi'im did for professionally was they told people about lost donkeys, so he goes to Shmuel, and he's looking for a donkey. Instead, he finds out he's going to be king, right? Because he's a big tzaddik, and he's tall and handsome, and everyone likes him a lot.
Shaul?
Yes, that's what it says. He's very tall and very handsome.
It's very good quality among the Nevi'im.
Yes. Good. So then he gets appointed as king. He's a super, super successful king. Everybody loves him. Everybody loves Shaul. And then what happens?
Shaul is nuts.
What?
No, they go to war after.
No,
they go to war.
This is where he's going like crazy. They go to war.
What? No, he's a very successful king. He wins a lot of wars, right?
He starts getting ego.
Not yet. But what's the downfall of Shaul? Correct. He goes to battle against Amalek, and Shmuel tells him. Right? Shmuel tells him.
Destroy everything,
destroy everybody, and he doesn't destroy the animals, and he doesn't destroy the king, and Shmuel comes back, and he says, "What is this that I hear?" And he tries to defend himself, and he says, "It was the people, it wasn't me, what do you want from me, blah, blah, blah," and Shmuel says, "You know what, this is terrible, because of this, you're going to lose your right to be king. He begs him to come back with him anyways. So he does eventually relent, comes back to him, Shmuel cuts up Agag, right, in this very dramatic scene. In the war against Amalek, right? Yeah, I'm not doing every detail in the book. But basically, God says, you know,
Shaul's
not going to be king. So, yes, we have the David Goliath story.
The plan was for
right?
him to be the king, though?
What?
The plan was for him to be king for eternity.
Yes, sounds like it, yes. Right? How? Good question. Right? How he's going to be king for eternity? Very good question. But okay.
What?
What's the problem with that?
He's not from David. He's not from Yehuda. Okay, that's a very long discussion, how we understand Ad Kiavo Shiloh, Breshit Memtet Yud, not for now. But basically, so Shaul is a beloved king, but then he messes up. He really messes up, so God decides that he's going to...
Take it away.
Yes, so he's going to take it away from him. So then we get the story, yes, of... we have multiple stories. We have David and Goliath, right? Which is the story of how David ends up, you know, practically in the palace because he comes, he hears Goliath, you know, speaking badly about God. He says, this is Chilul Hashem. I'm going to kill him. He kills him with a slingshot. We all know the story. And he ends up being, you know, in the meantime, you know, he's also the harp player for the king, for Shaul. You have the story of, Shmuel appointing David in this very strange time where he goes through all the sons of Yishai, doesn't even consider David, but eventually does consider David. There seems... What? He's a guy. He's the son. Remember Rus? Right? So Rus, Oved, Yishai, right? So...
Like some kind of figure...
According to Chazal, he never sins. We don't know much about him otherwise, right? I mean, in Pshat, we don't know much about him except that he's David's father. Now, Shmuel has this, and we'll come back to this in a minute, but Shmuel, you know, Hashem has to like prod him. Like, why didn't you notice? Why are you looking at looks, right? That you didn't notice David. So there seem to be two different appointment stories of David, which is a bit complicated, but okay. In the meantime, once David becomes anointed, what happens to Shaul?
He doesn't like that.
No, he doesn't know. But what happens? God leaves Shaul, and a spirit of depression or something like that descends on him. And in the meantime, remember that David is married to, right? In the meantime, is married Michal bat Shaul, right? Yes, because of the Goliath story, right? The Goliath story. And then, to summarize, I can't go into every detail in Shmuel, but in Shmuel, what happens? In the meantime, right, eventually, it becomes clear that David's going to become king, and Shaul is very angry, and Shaul tries to kill David for a long time, right? And who sticks by his side? Yonatan, right? Even though he's supposed to be king, and that makes Shaul even angrier, right? Don't you know that David's going to replace you? And then you get these constant stories of David, right? I sort of glossed over this. David, for a while, is the most loyal son-in-law, general, harp player of the king. But at some point, right, David starts to actually assert himself as king, and you have this minor civil war that's going on with a few notable incidents, including when David runs away to Nov Ir HaKohanim, and not realizing that he's no longer loyal to Shaul. They give him food, they give him a sword from Goliath, right, and Shaul massacres, has Doeg massacre all the Kohanim in Nov, right, and then you have all these battles going back and forth. No, Shaul.
Because they harbored him.
Correct. So then you get all these stories of his band of people as he's becoming king. He spends some time in amongst the, right, in Moab. He spends some time, right, eventually he wants to get food. He needs food. He tries to get food from Naval because he's been protecting his sheep, and he gets into a fight with Naval, almost kills Naval, and Avigail saves him from the sin, but eventually Avigail becomes his wife. Right, you get all these interesting things. You get all these stories with David's men trying to kill Shaul, and David saying, no, I'm not going to kill Mashiach Hashem. right? Consistently, and each time Shaul says, okay, you're great, you're a tzaddik, wonderful, but then he goes back to chasing him, right? This goes on for a very long time.
Kind of crazy.
But eventually, right? There's a lot of drama within this camp with Yoav, right, the general of David. We'll skip forward a little bit. Eventually, Shaul dies, right? And now David can theoretically assert himself, but in the meantime, he doesn't because Shaul's son, Ish-Boshet, takes over the throne temporarily. Avner, who's the general of Shaul, is like propping him up, but eventually Ish-Boshet gets into a fight with Avner, so Avner switches sides, but Yoav is angry at Avner because earlier in the story, Avner had killed Yoav's brother, so he ends up killing him, which makes David very upset, and David has to... What? Yoav is David's general, right? And Avner... Right, but then Avner joins David's camp to, and says, I can bring the kingdom over to you. There's all this drama. He kills him. David's not happy, but there's nothing he can do about it. At least he shows that he's sad about it. But by the end of this, David becomes king. David is a great king, except then he sins with David and Bathsheba, and that whole story, and is therefore punished, and you get many stories of punishment. You get the story of Amnon and Tamar, right, which is one of his sons who rapes one of his daughters, in a terrible story. Then you get Merit Avshalom, you have the death of a few kids, right? You have Merit Avshalom, where one of his sons rebels and tries to kill him while he's running away. He gets, you know, cursed and attacked by Shimei, Ben Gera, right? All types of terrible things. And this basically, that, you know, this is David's career. He makes some other mistakes with a census, right? But basically, Shmuel, Bet already tells you the story of David, and David dies not in Shmuel, in Malachim, right? David's story goes all the way through Shmuel and through the first few prakim of Malachim, and eventually dies in Malachim, okay? That's like a very, very, very quick summary of what goes on in Sefer Shmuel. Yes.
There's a part of David that there's many things he didn't understand. I never figured out what the...
There are a lot of things. That was like a 17-minute, very quick,
I'm saying, I always knew the first two. I forgot the third. It was crazy people in spiders, and I couldn't tell. I couldn't figure out what
the same things.
Because in the end, those three things helped him get...
Please leave the Midrashim. I do not have time to get into the Midrashim. Right, that's... There's just no time. That is a midrash, but there's no time to get into midrashim if we want to even understand what happens in the basic book of Shmuel. But this is basically the book of Shmuel, okay? Right? It's very, very long. Very, very long. So I can't leave you with too much on it, but let me try to give you some guiding principles in Shmuel, okay? Yosef asked a good question, right? A while ago. Which was, wait a second. I don't understand. Let me rephrase your question. If Shmuel wrote Shoftim to justify why we need a king, then why is he so against the king? Right? Why is he so against the king?
Right?
Right? So one could say, and I think this is what most people say, but I'm going to give a different shot. Right? I think most people say, look, at the beginning of his life he's against it, but like he comes around, right? And by the time he writes Shoftim, right? He came around to the notion that a king was probably a better than the alternative, right? Or something like that. Okay? I want to offer a different shot, which gives a bit of framing to the book of Shmuel. I want to be careful. And this is, let's go back to the mashal, to the example I gave before. Really, 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 what should Shoftim be an argument for? Not a king, but what? A central government. Right? I compare it to the Federalist Papers. Right? It's not a monarch per se. Right? Now, one of the things that strikes me about Shmuel, the book of Shmuel, is that the progression to king is not actually immediate. And Shmuel has three moments where I think he's slowly... The book of Shmuel, basically, as I see it, at least while Shmuel's alive, is a story of Shmuel being always one step behind where the Jews are, where it need to be, right? And God is sort of pulling him along. Because by the end of Shoftim, what there isn't is a central government. When does a central government begin in the book of Shmuel? Who's the first centralized leader? Shmuel. Right? Shmuel. Right? Think about it. Shmuel is a centralized leader. How do we describe him? Everyone loves him. He's going around judging the whole country. And then, and this is where... But by the time he actually leads, right? But what really tips me off to the fact that Shmuel is acting as a centralized leader, as a centralized government? Besides the fact that he just goes around and he's actually judging...
They only asked for a king once he got all of his son stuff.
And... there's one more point. Perek Chet Pasuk Aleph. There's something happened before.
That's what I quoted.
Vayhi kasher zaken Shmuel vayasim et banav shoftim liYisrael. Before they're rejected, what does Shmuel do?
He appoints them
as king, as dynastic leaders. Think about it. Right? In the book, there was a time in the book of Shoftim, this is a story we didn't dwell on, but there was a Shofate who almost became king, and who was it? Gidon, where they offered him to become a king, a dynastic king. What did he say? No, because God will rule. But you learn in that story that what is one of the definitions of a king that makes it more centralized? That it has a dynasty, right? That has continuity. Shmuel may not want a king, but what is he clearly already from the beginning of the book moving towards?
Centralized
dynastic government. Right? And even if you think before that, right, how does the book start off? With Eli sort of functioning as a centralized leader with an assumption of dynasty that is undone. Right? But meaning the book from its beginning is going towards federalism. Even before it goes towards monarchy. Why doesn't religious federalism, so to speak, meaning a centralized dynastic leader under a Navi work? Because his kids aren't up to it. Right? And Shmuel seems to take that personally. How do I know Shmuel takes it personally?
Because
God says, don't take it personally. It's about me, not you. But what does Shmuel think? It's about me. Right? And God says, no, it isn't. And that's why afterwards, before Shmuel retires, what does he make everyone admit? Lo chamor achad natati. Natati, right? That I was perfect. I didn't take any money from you. I was a great leader. It's not about me. It's just that, you know, my sons, whatever. So the people already want a king. Shmuel's one step behind. He's ready for what? For centralized dynastic leadership, he's just not ready for a king. Then what happens? At any point, does Shaul become okay with a king?
Yes.
When?
When?
No, when in Shmuel?
He said, oh, yeah, I'm the man.
Wrong. Before that. No?
What?
And this is why I want to... When? Shaul is fired. Right? While Shaul is king... Right, there is no evidence. We never find out if he comes to terms with the king. When do we find out that he's come to terms with there being a monarch?
When
he dethrones Shaul?
When?
When the Gog, and he kills the Gog himself.
Nope.
After that.
Yeah, when? Good, when? Thank you, when? Perek Tetzayin, Pasuk Aleph. After Hashem has fired Shaul for a while already, right? You get Vayomer Adonai El Shmuel Ad Matayata Mitabel Shaul Vanima Astiv Mimloch El Yisrael Malek Arnach Hashem and Velech Hashachol Yishai Bid Alachmik Yeridim Vanav Limelech. What are you still mourning that Shaul isn't king? I hate him. Take your flask and go get me a new king. But what is that telling you? Right, and this is, I find this to be a pattern.
He was okay with Shaul.
When does he come to terms with the fact there's a monarch?
By the time
the first monarch gets fired, and Hashem, remember, the first time, Shmuel is okay with a dynasty, but not a king. So what does God have to say?
It's okay.
Come to terms with a king. It's okay. Then, finally, Shmuel comes to terms with a king, but not really. He doesn't come to terms with the idea of a kingship in general. He comes to terms with Shaul. But he's not willing to move on and say, we need a king even if it's not Shaul. And Hashem has to like drag him and say, look, I fired him. Get over it already. We need a king even if it's not Shaul. Come on. Right? And then, even worse, right? What happens? He goes. He goes to Beit Yishai, and what happens?
He doesn't even notice that.
He doesn't notice of it. Why not? So look at Pasuk Vav, Perek Tzayin Pasuk Vav. He looks at Eliyahu and he says, I want him as king. Said, stop looking at and listen to these words. What does he say? Stop looking at what? Be careful. Stop looking at his height. What do you mean his height? What is he looking for? He's
looking for Shaul.
He's looking for Shaul. Shaul was tall. Right? And Hashem says, stop looking for people who look like Shaul. He used the same word as he just did for Shaul. Ki me'astiv. Right? He's even when he looks for a new king, what's he looking for? A Shaul replacement. And Hashem says, stop looking for someone who looks like Shaul. Right? And eventually, right, he gets, right, after six sons, right, he didn't want any of them. And he says, yeah, I got one kid left, which he doesn't even like. He's not even machshev, and he becomes king. Right? And I think that one of the things you got to understand is that, I mean, yes, part of the answer is that Shmuel comes around eventually. But I think part of it is also that Shmuel is the story of how Shmuel slowly comes to terms with Malchut Beit David. Because first he comes to terms with the notion that you need a centralized leader, maybe even a dynastic one. Then he comes to term with Shaul, but once he has a king, he's like caught up in his original model. And then eventually Hashem drags him along, and eventually it's okay with David. Because Shmuel isn't just the story of how we go from Shoftim and jump to David, it's the story of how slowly we go from scattered Shoftim to a centralized government to a monarchy, and then culminating in the Davidic monarchy. Right? The story of that entire process, which takes us through, you know, the middle of Shmuel Aleph. Right? Then, in the middle, obviously, you get all these prakim, because Chazal say that how many years was, right? How many years, according to Tanakh, is Shaul actually king? Two. How many years does it seem like he's king?
A lot more.
Right? The reason seems to be that Tanakh is counting the years that he was king before he formally lost it. Right? Formally lost the kingship, but he was functioning as king for a lot longer because people loved him. Right? Meaning, he's still functioning as king for many years, even after David is formally the king. Right? There's 7 years where David is only king in Hebron before he becomes king in Klal Yisrael. During those 7 years, Shaul and Ishbosheth are still functioning as king over the rest of Klal Yisrael, even if formally Hashem has removed the Malchus from them. So, the first 16-17 prakim of Shmuel are describing that trajectory, how we go from the disasters of Shoftim to a centralized government, to a monarchy, to the Davidic monarchy. But then you've got to let it shake itself out. The civil wars that come, the coup that essentially happens, right? And that's a long story, right? And within that story is the story of how Yonatan, despite the fact that he's from the old monarchy, is loyal to David, right? And how David repays him, right? There's a lot of stories in the middle, but if you understand the framing, right, it's during this time that David's formally king, you have to, there's this transition period where Shaul's still functioning as king, we gotta hear all that war. Now in the middle of that, what else happens? Right, so you hear all the, now in the middle, you also then hear about David's kingship. So you hear about his successful wars, you hear about his sins, right? And you've got to shake that all out, right? And one of the central questions you've got to deal with in Shmuel, obviously, but we don't have time for this, is why is it that Shaul gets fired for a relatively minor sin, and David does some pretty terrible sins, gets punished but never loses his malchus? What is unique about David? This is one of the central questions everyone tries to ask. What? He possibly committed adultery or something close to it, had the husband of the person he wanted to marry killed at battle, which is not total murder, but the Torah calls it murder. He carries out a census of Klal Yisrael that causes many, 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 many Jews to die because it releases the powers of the like Malach HaMavis on them or something like that. Yes, this is a story in Shmuel.
You get pick one of the three.
Yes, that's the pick the punishment that you want. Right, he makes some like egregious mistakes.
Oh,
right,
but nothing as bad as when God told Shaul to do something. Yvada did not that.
Really, if you had asked me, what's worse, like not killing the animals in Agag or having someone's husband murdered so you can commit adultery? You know,
don't kill.
Again, there's a lot of.
One also
relates to the nation, one doesn't.
Okay, so some people say maybe it's a national versus personal. There's all types of answers. Again, as I said before, the point of these shiurim is not to, right, give you an in-depth Eun shiur about the entire book. It's trying to frame the book in its broader narrative. So I'm trying to give you an idea. Like, these are questions you have to deal with, right? Which is why is David, despite it all, the idyllic king? Because there's no denying that he is. Right, now, yes. Part of it is that maybe his tshuva is less national in nature. Maybe. Right? The Rav Meidan challenges that because he says, in the end of the day, taking other people's wives is literally the first abuse of power that the Torah records back in Bereshit. Right? Vayar benot Elohim and benot ha'adam. Right? That the powerful people saw other people's wives or other women and started taking them. Right? That's all the way at the beginning. Right? Yes, Bereshit. Parshas Bereshit. Like, all the way at the beginning. Yeah, right before Noach. Right, like that's one of the epitomes of abuse of powers. It could also, you know, the classic answer is that David does tshuva and Shaul tries to dray around. Oh, it's not my fault. It's not my fault. Yeah, says chatasi immediately. That's obviously part of it. Now you also find out. Now part of Shmuel is not just that David is king, but yes, you learn about his sins and how he fixes them. But also you have this moment, which is very important, where God says. He says that he tries to do what? One of the central narratives in the story is that David is really good at praising God. Right? Because he brings the Aron to Yerushalayim and he dances in front of it. And one of the climactic moments is Michal says to him, "What are you doing acting like a fool in front of all these peasant people?" Right? And what does he say? In a very, very Shalom Bayis way, what does he say? "I'm doing it in front of God, and that's why God chose me over your father." Right? 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 Like, but as bad as that moment is, maybe in terms of Shalom Bayis, right? When she gets punished for it, she never has children. Or according to Chazal, she dies in childbirth, but whatever, not a good situation. But what's the point? That David, one of the things you learn of what makes him an idyllic king is that he's willing, right? Like, he is totally committed to praising God, even if that means debasing himself and dancing like a, you know, like a peasant, right? Shaul is very into the, right, if you put Michal as her father's representative, he's very into the pomp and circumstance. And David understands that to be king, now if we go back to Shmuel, remember, Shmuel said, "I don't want a king. Who do I want to be your king?
God."
And David says, "Look, I get that." How do I get that? Because just because I'm king doesn't mean that I'm going to prioritize my honor over God's. Right? When it comes time to dance in front of God, I'm going to dance. Right? That's what it takes. And what is his deepest desire in life that the book tells you? What does he want more than anything? To build the Beis HaMikdash. And what does Hashem say to him? Wrong. Oh, good. I'm glad you said that. It's wrong. It's not true. What does God say to him?
"You're a warrior."
Nope.
He says something along those
lines. Nope, never. Never happened. What never is? Happened. All of Tanakh. Lo hayu dvar me'olam. Never says. What does God say to him?
Oh, no, I'm just quoting a pasuk.
Oh, no, you're not. You're quoting a pasuk, but not. But that. This is a key. One second. What does God say to him?
"I
This is something.
Too many wars. Not like the.
No. Wrong. Water. Wrong. Wrong. What does God say to him?
Blood on
no.
Your son.
God says yes. God says yes, but not yet. Your son will do it. And David takes that as a yes. Because how does he respond to that? With a full out Shira, which in Divrei Hayamim is expounded in great detail. It's a very long song. Right? A very long Shira. Where does... Who says that the reason he couldn't build it was to the blood on his hands? David. Not God. David understands that. That's David's... That's something that David understands. David gets that. But technically... Technically, Hashem says yes, but not yet. Not no. Yes, but not yet. By the way, where does David get the notion that it's because of blood? Shimi. Shimi ben Gera, because when he's being chased out during the time of Avshalom, during the merit of Avshalom, his son's rebellion, Shimi says to him that you're an Ishtamim. Right? And he takes it to heart and seems to perceive that as Dvar Hashem. And therefore he understands the reason he couldn't build the Beit HaMikdash was because he was an Ishtamim, because he was involved in war. But technically Hashem never said that. Hashem said not yet. Why is that important? So he says not yet because, and here's what I want to, this is a very critical point in understanding Shmuel. Why is that important? Why is David so happy?
He means he could have done it.
No.
He has the ability to.
No. Yes, because that is what that moment when he learns that he's not just a king, he's the beginning of a dynasty. Because God promises him that his dynasty will be attached to the Beit HaMikdash, which means he will have a dynasty. Right? That's why he's so happy. Because David is such a good king, despite all his mistakes. But in the end of the day, at core, right, he is the paradigm, and this is what you learn in Tehillim, of the person who praises God and knows how to utilize the monarchy to be, right, to be Magdil Shem Shamayim. And therefore, when he asks Hashem, Hashem doesn't say no. Hashem says yes, but not yet. And David, even though he can't do it and wants to, he rejoices because he understands that means that Hashem has recognized that he represents the idyllic monarchy and therefore will grant him a dynasty who will indeed be tied to the fate of the Beit HaMikdash. Which, by the way, is the story of which book?
Melachim.
Very good, right? You see where I'm going with this, right? And that's what you learn. So Shmuel, again, I can't get into every detail in Shmuel, but Pachor Yoter, right? Yes, my favorite phrase, right? I think is basically.
Well,
yes, but not in this way, and not that his dynasty would be tied to the fate of the Beit HaMikdash, which for him is very important.
God saying that now means it's going to be from his family, not just from Yehuda.
Correct. It's going to be his kids. So I think that what Shmuel really is, it is the right. If Shoftim was the argument for why we need a king, Shmuel is the story of how slowly Klal Yisrael, and Shmuel particularly, is led on the path first of getting a centralized leader, then a dynastic leader, then a monarchy, and then Malchut Beit David, and then it's the story of David. Why is it that, again, despite all his failings, he represents the ideal king? Right? Because he understands that the role of the king is to be Magdil Shem Shamayim, and therefore his deepest desire is to build the Beit HaMikdash, which is manifest in his writing of Tehillim, his collection of Tishpachot HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? That is his moment where he says to Michal, I was chosen instead of your father because I understand this, and your father didn't. And that is that moment at which he, in a nutshell, captures what Shmuel is telling you. Right, that it's not just that the end goal is we need a king. We need a king who recognizes the point of the Malchus is to Lahagdil Shem Shamayim and Malchut Shamayim. And therefore he promises him, yes, you will. It'll be your son. Now yes, David makes mistakes. And therefore Shmuel also has to tell the story of all his mistakes and all the Avera and their consequences. Right, that's a big part of the book that requires a lot of analysis. But at some level, that the key to understanding the book is that moment where Hashem says, yes, but not yet. You will have a dynasty and they will be tied to the Beit HaMikdash. And that brings you to Malachim, which, I don't know if we're going to have time to do this. I don't know. You guys tell me. I think we might. What?
Okay,
I think we're going to have to finish here. But because guys are giving up. But so let me give you. So guys, let me give you the 2-minute version and then we'll come back to develop Malachim at a different point. Right? Is that Malachim, what you'll see, right? And I'll develop this more next time, is that whatever that is that Malachim. Remember I mentioned Malachim starts in a very weird place. Right, Malachim starts in a very weird place. Yeah, meaning you would think that Shmuel should end with the death of David, and Malachim should start with
Shlomo.
But it doesn't, it starts with the death of David. And I think the reason is because Malachim isn't the story of Shlomo. It's the story of David's dynasty. And therefore, the critical moment is not the beginning of Shlomo's Malchus, but it's the transition from David to Shlomo, the fact that that happens. Right? And I'll prove it next time.
What?
So that happens accidentally in the middle of the story. But if you just have the bookends of all of Malachim, Malachim starts with the death of David and the first transition to the dynasty, and ends with what? Churban HaBayit in the last Melech Yehuda. Right, meaning if you just bookend the book, right, it's clear it's the story of the Davidic dynasty, which makes sense, because if Shmuel was the story of how we go from decentralized leader to a centralized leadership to Shaul to eventually Malchut Beit David, and then an exploration of what makes Malchut Beit David unique, and God's promise that it would be his dynasty and what they represent that will carry on the Beit HaMikdash, Malachim is therefore the story of Malchut Beit David, where it goes wrong and why we get Pilug HaMelucha, but the bookends of Malachim at the very least are still the beginning of the dynasty, not of the king, and the end is the end of the dynasty, which comes with the end of the Beit HaMikdash, because those two are linked. Okay, that would lead us to Malachim, but I think we have to give up because people are dying on me, so...